Okay, today's November 10th. And we're learning Yirmiyahu, Perkov Beis, Pasuk Yud. And remember, we're in the middle of two chapters that relate to the statements of the prophet to the kings of Israel at this time. Yirmiyahu only mentions three kings in his introduction of his book. That would be Yoshiyahu, Yehoyakim, and Tzidkiyahu. But there were two other kings in whose time Yirmiyahu spoke, and that would be Yehoahaz and Yehoyachin. The reason they are not mentioned in the Koteret is because they only ruled 3 months. So Yirmiyahu does not give any time to them. But as we'll see now in these few psukim, he seems to address them, at least according to some Mefarshim. So let's see what he's talking about. Okay, prosecute. It says, Al tivku lemeis, al tanudu lo. Do not cry for the one who is dead. Do not mourn and eulogize him. Bechu v'chol aholeich. Cry for the one who was taken away. Ki lo yeshuvod v'ra'ez eretz molatato. He will no longer return to the land where he was born. Okay? Chapter 22, verse 10. Cry for the one who is no longer, who has been taken away from his land. He's not going to return. Because thus has God said to Shalom, the son of Yoshiyahu, the king of Yehuda, Hamolech tachas Yoshiyahu aviv, who ruled in the stead of his father Yoshiyahu, Asher yatzam min hamakom hazeh, lo yashuv sham od. When he leaves this place, he is never coming back. Ki bimkom asher higlu oso sham yamus. The place that they're taking him, that's where he'll die. Ve'esharet zazos lo yireh od. He will never see this land again. So this is what we have to do. We have to figure out. It says, don't cry. Don't cry for the mace. Cry for the holeich, the one who was taken away from this land, right? Because he's not returning. Because thus says God to Shalom ben Yoshiyahu, and it says, Hamoleich tachas aviv, who ruled instead of his father. Right? Where are they taking you? You're not returning. Now, most commentaries say that the Holeich is Shalom. Right? He's the one that they're taking away. What's the basic problem with this name? No one has a problem with this name, Shalom Ben Yoshiyahu HaMoleich.
Sounds like Shalom.
That's not necessarily a problem. What's the problem based on how I introduced today's class? Who is he? No king of Israel named Shalom in the Bible.
Shlomo?
Shlomo, the son of Yoshiyahu. If he's one of the last kings of Israel during the time of Yirmiyahu, who is he? Right? We've never heard of a man named Shalom. He's not mentioned in all of Sefer Melachim. There's no king of Israel named Shalom who ruled on the throne. So what are you talking about? Who, and why should you cry for him? Right? It's a serious problem. Yirmiyahu seems to be making up a king of Israel. Right? Okay, the fact is that Shalom is mentioned in one place. But not where you would expect to find it. He's not mentioned in Divrei Hayamim in the comparable list of the kings. In other words, Divrei Hayamim is the story of Malachim repeated. Divrei Hayamim Melchei Yehuda, right? So that's what you expect to find it, in the narratives of Divrei Hayamim towards the end of the book. It's not there. Where it appears is in the beginning of the book. Listen to this. The beginning of the Sefer lists all the kings and their children. Right? Now, not all of the children of kings ended up being king. Usually only one of the children of kings ended up being king. But there's only one king of Israel who had more than one son of his become king. In fact, he had three sons who were king. Yoshiyahu.
Because they kept getting killed?
Yes, good. Yeah. Okay. Yoshiyahu had I remember when I wrote the asterisk on the board last time, his son, Yehoahaz, was king. when Jehoahaz was killed, he was still very young. So his brother, Jehoiakim, ruled after him. That would be another son of Yoshiahu. Jehoiakim ruled 11 years. So when he was killed, he had a son old enough to become king, all of 18 years old, and his name was Jehoiachin. But he was not Yoshiahu's son, he was Jehoiakim's son. Mm-hmm. When Jehoiachin was killed after three... Well, not killed. When Jehoiachin was taken captive after 3 months, he didn't have a son old enough to be king. He himself was only 18. So his uncle correct, Tzidkiyahu, another son of Yoshiahu, ruled after him. Right? Where does this leave room for Shalom? Cry for the Holech.
Is that another name?
It's got to be another name for someone. Let's see what Midrashi says. Okay. Midrashi. See Rashi in Pasuk Aleph. This is what God says to Shalom. Hutzitkiyahu. V'kach nikra v'harabi'i Shalom. Rashi takes you to the Pasuk I want to read for you. And he says that his fourth son was Shalom. V'kra'o revi'i l'malchus b'vnei Yoshiyahu shebetchila malach Yehoachaz v'acharkach Yehoyakim v'acharav Yehoyachin v'acharav Tzidkiyahu. He was the fourth king, that's why he's called, he's mentioned fourth in the Pasuk. Rashi, I have to tell you, hopefully did not expect you to actually look up this Pasuk. Because if you look up this Pasuk, he's not misrepresenting the Pasuk. He's writing what the Pasuk says, but he just didn't write what the whole thing the Pasuk says. Listen to the Pasuk and tell me why you cannot suggest that Shalom is actually Tzidkiyahu. I'm sorry, it appears in Rashi, but listen, I'm going to read you the Pasuk. Ready? It says, Ubnei Yoshiyahu, get this, Habachor Yochanan. I don't know who he is. Hasheni Yehoyakim. Hashlishi Tzidkiyahu. Harevi'i Shalom.
Where's Yehoahaz?
He might be Yochanan, but do you see what's going on here? How can you possibly say Shalom is Tzidkiyahu when...
It says
Tzidkiyahu was third and Shalom was fourth. He's the two listed two separate sons. Right? How can you possibly consider that Shalom is Tzidkiyahu? It's a vast drash of the Pasuk to say that two separate sons listed in the Pasuk are the same son. Right? Okay, so that's what made some Pashtonim reevaluate who this Shalom is. Okay, you agree? Plus, there's another problem with this. Is he saying in the beginning of the Pasuk, don't cry for the one who is dead. Right? And here are the four sons mentioned in Devarim. Yochanan, Yehoyakim,
Tzidkiyahu,
and Shalom. These are the four sons of Yoshiyahu. He says, don't cry for the man who is dead. Cry for the man who was taken out of his land to live as a captive, never to return. Right? Tzidkiyahu, that didn't happen to Tzidkiyahu. How can you bend that into the narrative of Tzidkiyahu? What happened to Tzidkiyahu? He tried to escape Yerushalayim, was caught, and was killed right before he had a chance to escape. He couldn't be called a holeich, whereby a mace is better than him. Right? Oh, better to die than to have to be the holeich, who has to be taken out of his land, never to return. That didn't happen to Tzidkiyahu. He was killed right as he was escaping from Yerushalayim. Right? So I have two reasons why I have very much skepticism about saying that Shalom is Tzidkiyahu. I'm sorry, I see it in print in Rashi, but I just... One, because it doesn't fit the description of this whole Eich contrast to the mace. And two, it's how could you consider that Shalom is Tzidkiyahu when they're both listed separately in the Pasuk? Right? Following? Okay. Therefore... I would like to suggest that based on the history. After all, what happened when Yoshiyahu was killed? His son took over but only ruled for 3 months. Remember, I draw the map on this side now? Remember that when the Assyrian Empire had been crumbling, I think I drew this map last week. Here's Egypt. Okay. Here's Israel. Okay. The Assyrian Empire had been crumbling and falling apart. The Egyptian king, who was crippled, by the way, asked for passage along the east coast, eastern border of Israel, to go and fight against the Assyrians. Yoshiyahu should have just let him do it. Who cares? You want to attack Assyria? God, isn't it? You don't like Assyria. Yoshiyahu said, I'm not interested in you having forces up here, because then Egypt could just surround us. So as bad as Assyria was for us, we didn't like Assyria, but we also don't want Egypt up there. All right. So Yoshiyahu met the forces of Egypt here in the north of Israel, a place called Megiddo. And Yoshiyahu was killed there. And they went further north, but were so weakened that they were not successful, and blamed it on the Israelites weakening them. So on their way back down, back to Egypt, with all their forces, they killed Yoshiyahu's son, Yehoahaz, 3 months later. But first they took him to Egypt, never to return to Israel. Okay? Get the point? He's the Holech. He's Shalom. Yehoahaz is Shalom. We all left with a problem. Right? And obviously it requires us to say that some kings had more than one name, but you know what? We already know that. Zedekiah's not. That's not his name. What's he called in Malachi? Matanya. Yehoiakim, that's not his name. He's called Eliakim. What am I saying Yehoahaz's name is? Shalom. Okay. If you want, that's how you want to have it that way. Okay. Yochanan is a son of Yoshiyahu who wasn't worthy of being king. Okay. Yehoiakim ruled. Zedekiah ruled. Shalom ruled. What's my problem with this? Is that if Shalom is really Yehoahaz, right? I have a problem. Why does Dibrayim list him last if he was ostensibly the oldest? Right? David did the same, didn't he? What am I talking about? Why did David do the same? When choosing the next king? No. When choosing the next king to rule after him?
That's the question.
Why is Shalom, his youngest son, ruling first?
Younger brothers?
Sometimes a king chooses his youngest son to be the next king. I don't know. Right now it's his favorite wife. It's his newest wife. And she badgered him into appointing the youngest son to be the next king. You see what I'm saying? According to this, you have to...
Qualified.
Yeah, it was most qualified. Yeah, most qualified, maybe. You said you understand? Look, Yoshiyahu himself was only 39 when he died. How old can all of them be? Okay. Alright, so let's close shop with that, okay? This parish is asking that Shalom is Yehoahaz, alright? But not Zedekiah. Then everything makes sense. If you read it all back, together with the Pasuk in Divrei Yamin, it all can make sense. I wonder why all these people having two names. Don't be surprised. Kings often had two names. Didn't Shlomo have two names? What was Shlomo's second name? You did, yeah. Okay? So, we do see this as a common thing.
So
and
what is Rashi facing?
It's actually a Gemara, so I can't object to Rashi quoting it. It's just that it is. So you understand my two problems. Mm-hmm. How could Shalom be Zedekiah when the two are mentioned separately in the verse? And two, to say don't cry for the man who's dead. Cry for the one who has to live through the indignity of being captured and taken to a land where he won't return. That could refer to Jehoiachin, who also was taken as a youth to Babel and lived there for 37 years in captivity and never returned to Israel. But I prefer that it fits Jehoahaz much better. Okay. All right, so basically what he's saying is, by the way, who would be the mace then? Don't cry for the mace. cry for the Holeich, the mace would be, no, the mace would be Yoshiyahu himself. Don't cry for Yoshiyahu. He was killed in battle and buried. Cry for his son, who was taken into captivity and taken down to Egypt.
But Egypt.
Okay. All right. That's all we'll do with this. All right. Why is he doing? Why is he saying all this? Read on and you'll see. Hoy bo nebeso b'lo tzedek v'yosev b'lo mishpat. What he's doing is he's trying to address the issues of each and every king in order. I addressed Yoshiyahu, he's going to address him again. I addressed, and not directly, he's dead already, but I addressed Yehoyachin. Now I'm going to address Yehoyakim, Yoshiyahu's other son. Hoy bo nebeso b'lo tzedek v'yosev b'lo mishpat. Woe to the one who's building a house without justice and righteousness, and he's building upper floors and upper stories below Mishpat. Do you get a picture of Louis XIV here?
Sure.
Right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
France was
spending less on life, and France was starving.
Right. The populace was starving, eating rats, and the king was building this amazing palace. It's not going to last. That jump started a revolution. Right, so this is how he's behaving. He's building upper stories and high balconies. And he forces people to build these palaces for free. At least put some money in the economy. Right, to give people will be happy to build a palace for the king if he gets some payment for it. Right, he does not give. Any poel, I mean, here it means wages. Okay? Rashi says in Pasuk Gimel, Al Yehoyakim hu omer, shehu haya rasha v'sofa inyan mochiach. This is being told to Yehoyakim, and the end of these few psukim prove it. Okay, let's see how it's true. Ha omer, evneli beis midos. He says, I will build for myself a house of great proportion. It's interesting, there's actually an archaeological site in Yerushalayim. When you walk the steps up from the Kotel Plaza, there's steps to walk up towards Isha Torah and Yeshiva the Kotel, and you go up to the main, the old city up on the top. I don't mean right when you go straight up the Kotel, you have to go to the parking lot and up and weave through. On the way up, there is an archaeological site. They call it Beit Midot, because it's a very large house. I don't know if they got it from here, but Yirmiyahu is very critical of the name. Beit Midot means the conspicuous consumption, the gaudy building that the people are doing. Right? And they prove that the household must have belonged to Kohanim, because you see almost every room has a little mikveh at the bottom. Mm-hmm. Private house where people had their own mikvehs with steps going down. And they saw that the utensils were made of stone. So someone who lived that close to the Beis HaMikdash must have been extremely wealthy. And the fact that they had their cups and saucers, they see, made of stone, meant that they were Kohanim, because it's not. Yeah, stone is not does not receive ritual defilement. It's not makabel tuma. Metal can become tummy. Even wood can become tummy. But stone does not become tummy.
There's a little museum
defiled.
In the old city about a family of Kohanim.
Oh, that's about the
sun. Yeah, that's right. I think that's what they call it. But that's on the other side. Vertas is what I think a little further into the old city. Mm-hmm. But they probably found the same thing. They find whenever they find stone utensils, it's usually a sign of kahuna. Okay. So, because they're much harder to make than metal utensils, so if someone made it, they must have done it with the intent of avoiding ritual impurity. Okay, so he says, let's continue with the Beit Midot, Baliot Meruvachim, and you make very, very broad and spread out balconies, V'karalo Chalonai V'safun Ba'arez U'mashoch Ba'shoshar. Boy, he's really getting critical here. He says he's ripping open large windows to have panoramic views, and he is hiding himself with cedar, and he is building shoshar. If you probably have marble, is that your? What's your English translation for the last word in verse 14?
No, vermilion.
Oh, vermilion? Yeah.
The color.
Okay, Rashi says, "Beshoshar tsevahu mimin hatziurim." Okay, he's looking for all checking out swatches of carpeting, and he's looking for, and he's bothered with it, not worrying about any affairs of the state. A disgusting picture of the king of Israel. Our king is supposed to be like a philosopher king, who's busy holding the Torah all the time. Not amassing wealth, not amassing horses, not amassing a huge harem to make a lot of children. But his business is som to simal chamelach sheitei masoalecha, and you're not doing your job. Hatim loch ki atam mischaver ba'ores. You want to be king and compete with cedar. You want people to say when they come see your palace, oh, it reminds us of the great palaces of the ancient world. Avicha halo ochal v'shasa. Your father, very rare, direct reference to Yoshiahu in Sefer Yirmiyahu. Your father ate and drank. He promulgated justice and charity. Az Tovlo, he lived a good life. He was king for 31 years. Right? In other words, if you want a comfortable life, there's room for comfort for a king. Even in Socrates' picture of a king. You don't talk about the philosopher king in the Republic. Right? So there's room for comfort.
There are two houses that went up in Highland Park where I live with Cole. They're just enormous. And there's tremendous controversy. There's a lot of anti-Semitism because of these two houses. It's like three times the size of regular houses. It goes around corners and...
What they do is they buy three lots and they destroy the houses. These 800,000 and $1.5 million homes. They destroy two or three of them. And then they build a $7 million monstrosity in its place. Well, they say not.
Well, they have to get their permission from the county and all the ordinances.
What's going on? Well, you can't go to any Jewish neighborhood today without seeing these kind of people. Muncie and 5'10".
One of the guys works for IBM.
You can't just have a regular house. Yeah, well, okay. No, can I say, buy a house that's already there. You don't have to tear down home. It raises tremendous ire of the local populace who can't afford to do so. And even if they could, why would I want to buy a house to destroy it? My brother bought a relatively brand new house, 8, 9, 10 years old. There was another matching house right next door on the plot, right next to him. A young pisher bought it, a 25-year-old.
Yeah, but now it's empty because you can't finish it.
Right, a young kid bought it. Tore down a brand new house.
$1.5 million
house, tore it to the ground.
Totally new bathroom.
So what's there sitting there now? An unfinished monstrosity because he ran out of money.
Paint job is all that really needs.
City people like me can't understand.
It's just.
What do you mean?
I don't know. So I remember when I was teaching Yeshayahu, coincidentally, chapter 22 of Yeshayahu. Blames the people for the king for taking down homes.
Oh, this is a good story.
He was somehow Chizkiyahu was also breaking down homes. I'll explain afterwards why he was doing that. But
eminent
the prophet he was practicing eminent domain to build the wall to protect from the Assyrians. And we can see today there's something called the Broad Wall. If you go in the old city, you can see it's you have to look down.
Right.
You can see it makes reference to a broad wall mentioned in Sefer Nechemiah, but it doesn't say this prophecy in Yeshayahu. And you could see that on both sides of the wall are little rooms. He was in such a hurry to build this wall, he tore down, went and built it right through people's homes. And the Yeshayahu complained about this. You can't take down a person's home like this. Hashem will save you, don't worry. So I mentioned this to the class, and I said, I wonder what Yeshayahu would say today about all these neighborhoods where they're taking down homes. So one kid in the class said, I'll tell you what would happen today. The rabbi of my shul here in Flatbush spoke against it, and they fired him that week.
Okay.
No warning. Speak against us knocking down the homes. They fired him. Because he dared speak out against what Yeshayahu would... Look, can I say? You have Balabatim who are doing it. The people spreading the butter on your bread.
Rabbi Lubeck spoke out about it, but just for me and older.
Yeshayahu spoke against it because he wasn't paid by his audience. You know, couldn't fire him. Hashem was his boss. It's a real issue. I know you'll come to the defense and say, listen, I made a lot of money last year, and I have a lot of kids in the house,
and I gave
grandchildren come over, and I gave more tzedakah. You know,
They have a case there where somebody like the Boston Rebbe, it's not the Boston Rebbe, has a house there, and they have Shabbos every service. They have and Yidden, who live near there, are wild about it because cars are parking and blocking their houses. Got this?
I don't get it.
They go to get the exact details, but he comes in and they have Shabbos there.
Okay.
And leave the car
people
for
from a neighborhood come to him for Shabbos instead of going to the other shuls, and they're blocking other people's homes.
Because the other shuls,
they don't drive anywhere. Right. You don't understand this.
Okay, let's go on. Don din ani vebionos tov halohi adas of sinum Hashem. If you're king, your job is, verse 16, Ted Zion, your job is to judge the poor, take care of the infirmed, look out for the ones who are weak, who can't afford to take care of themselves. Now, the Yeshayahu also, I remember, so just saw in his Sefer in Perek Beis, he complains about the poor and the orphans. You know why? They have no one to support them because they can't afford to pay the kickbacks that the kings and the leaders need in order to take care of them. So the orphans and the widows are all they don't have the shalmonim to give. Right? What a corrupt society we've become. Ki einei necha v'lipcha ki mal bitzecha. Your mind and your heart is only on your own bitzecha, like ma betzab to me, on your own gain. Right? Like when Reuven said, ma betzah ki, what's betzah is there in killing Yosef? Right? And shedding his blood. Let's at least get something out of it. That was Yehuda said. Val dama makili shpoch val oshik val hamarutzel asos. You're all so busy rushing to commit more oppression, to spill more innocent blood. So that is that's what's happening here because the kings don't have any influence on the people. Achein ko amar Hashem. Now, apparently, this was some of the dirges that they'd sing when someone died. No one is going to sing any dirge when you die. You know what they're going to do when you die? They're going to be thrilled that now they have a chance to have a new king. Hmm. Right? You're going to be buried like a donkey. They're going to drag your body to the gates of Yerushalayim. Now, there's a little problem with this. There's a few other cases in Yirmiyahu, as we're about to see. This didn't happen this way. Right? Okay. Rashi just cites the Targum, but in Malachim it just says he died and he was buried with his family. Right? Okay, so, however, Yechezkel also seems to refer to the death of Jehoiakim as, Bible is contradicting itself about what happened to this man when he died. First of all, it's perfectly okay for a prophet to predict a violent death, and then he did a great tshuva and it was avoided. Yirmiyahu himself establishes this rule that when a prophet says something for bad and it doesn't come true, that does not mean the prophet is false. Yonah's single prophecy was in 40 days this city is going to be destroyed. It wasn't, because they listened. The assumption is that anything bad a prophet says happens if you don't change. Sometimes they say you have to change big time in order for this not to happen. Sometimes a small change will help. But we never know what it is, so it always pays to do tshuva. Okay. So, Ali ha-Lebanon etzakiyu ha-Bashan t'nikolich etzakiyu me'avarim ki nishpiru kol ma'avoyich. Go up north. Go and scream from the hilltops, from the Bashan, from as far as you can get north, because that's where the trouble is coming from. Ki nitzafonti batachara. Give out your screams and your voice. Call out, because everybody all your lovers are going to turn against you. Little lovers, the people that you're looking upon to stand in for you in your day of when your day comes in. Dibarti alayich b'shalva sayich, amart lo eshma. When things were good for you, that's when I spoke to you, and you said, "No, I'm not listening." Darkeich minirayich ki lo shamat b'koli. I tried to change your ways from your youth. You didn't want to listen to me then. That's the time to get someone to listen before they get entrenched in their ways. Now you're fully entrenched. You're sacrificing your children to the gods. How can I change you? I couldn't get you to change when things were good. Well, now they're going to have to change. Because if I give you the keys to the car, and that's what I did. I took you to Israel, I gave you a car, I gave you a land, I gave you heat, I gave you everything you needed, and I gave you the keys. What did you do? You messed up the car. You dented the car. I should have taken away the keys right away. Then you came home drunk one day, and I still didn't take away the keys. Now, you're going to destroy the car in your life. What can I do to you? I have to take away things from you. Right?
Is that why you see gremlins through the window of the airplane?
Yeah, well, I have to do more and more. until they accept you, right? Is that a film, right?
That was great.
Okay. So let's continue reading. So he says, Pasuk Chav Gimel Yosh. You see what you have it? Alright. It says, Yoshavt Balvanon Mekunant Ba'arazim Manechant Bevolach Chavolim Chil Kayoleda.
Why is there a yud after every word?
So in these early forms of second person feminine does have the yud there, like in Megillas Rus.
Oh yeah.
But the Masorah changes it. The Masorah changes it to the regular way it's supposed to be spelled. Yoshavt. Yirmiyahu has a lot of kriyuksivs in it. Bavanel's like Dhamma to the Sefer discusses the nature of such a thing, but just say it's like a general kriyuksiv, spelled one way, pronounced the other way, and it's whether it's a correction of sorts or they both make sense, we'll just leave that for now. It just means that you are residing in the north near Lebanon, you are bemoaning to the tall trees, right? When these things happen, it'll be like giving birth, right? Chavalim chil kayoleda. The only difference is when you give birth, there's something good that happens afterwards. Your chil kayoleda, what was usually called chevlei mashiach, right? You've heard that? Because it's painful now, but at least it'll give birth to something, right? Not for you. Chai ninu mashem, kim yekne yohu ben yohu kim melech yudah chosam al yad imini kim yishamet kenka. By my word, God uses the lashon of shavua. This kne yohu ben yohu kim, you see him? It's not even mentioned there because he only ruled 3 months. But you see, even Yoyachin had a second name, Knayahu. In Esther, he's called Yechanya. Imagolash, Eglusar, Imechanya, Melapid. He had three names, Knayahu. They all sound alike. Knayahu, Yechanya, and Yehoyachin. This is what I'm telling about Knayahu. He's not going to have any children on my throne. But what does he call God's throne here in Pasuk Chav Gdalet? He will not have a, what do you call it? Chotam. Yelo chotam al yad yimini. It's a strange word to use for a king.
Right? There,
a stamp.
Right, king side
is
stamps.
Is it a Hebrew stamp. Phrase for AKA? Also known as? Well, they don't never say that.
But what is it called there in English in 24? Signet. S-I-G-N-E-T.
That's a thing in a ring, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Someone who can stamp official decrees. Yeah. That's a chotam. But he doesn't use the word melech. Now this is amazing because he swears that in the future no descendant of Yehoyachin will ever be a chotam on my throne. Look, he says, you will fall in the hands of your enemies, you will fall in the hands of Nebuchadnezzar, and you will fall in the hands of the Chaldeans. I'm taking you to a land where you weren't born. That's where you'll be taken, and that's where you'll be. That's where you'll die. Now that sounds like the Holeich, right? Okay, but we said before that the Holeich was Yehoshua's. All right, Rashi says the Holeich is Yehoyachin based on this pasuk. He says that's where you're going to die. V'al aretz asher heimenasim es nafsham lashuv sham shama lo yashuvu. Will you hope to return? You will not return. Okay. And he says, "Ha'etzev nivzen nafutzo isha ze Knayahu." This disgusting man, this despicable man named Knayahu, im klien chifetzbo. He is an unwanted vessel. Maduahut luhu v'zaro v'shlechu ala aretz shel yodo.
Why should he have become so evil to be cast out on the land? He only ruled for 3 months. The evil that's happening to him is not even his fault, Kibayaho. It's the fault of his elders, of his parents. It's the fault of Yoyakim. Eretz, Aretz, Shimi Dvar Hashem. Right? And Miyahu does this a few times. He mentions something 3 times in a row. Look at it, 3 words in a row. The last one's Aretz because it's an Esnachta. Land, land, land! Listen to what Hashem says. Komar Hashem Kisfuas or Isha Ze'ariri. This land will never see him again when he leaves. Write this man childless. Gever lo yitzlach b'yamav. He shall never succeed in his life. None of his descendants will rule over the throne because he won't have any descendants. What does Ariri mean? No children. When Abraham says to God, what are you giving me? I have no children. He's telling me, great nation, but I have no children. What point is there? Right? So Hashem says, write this man down. He's going to die childless. Now, 2 things that were just said about Yehoyachin simply did not come true. He was told that he would not have a descendant who would be a chotam on God's throne. Of course not, if he's having no children. Right? Well, guess what? Listen to this pasuk. The last pasuk in Sefer Chagai, when Bnei Yisrael are told to rebuild the temple and to appoint 2 leaders, to appoint Yehoshua to be the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, and to appoint, or you'll recognize the name from Ma'oz Tzur, Zerubbabel, as the political leader of Israel. Ibn Ezra says Zerubbabel was Nehemiah, but whatever it is, that his name should be Zerubbabel. And listen to the last pasuk. Vayom ahunu Hashem tzvakos, ekochacho Zerubbabel ben Sha'altiel avdi ne'um Hashem, v'samticha kachosom, ki b'chobachardi ne'um Hashem tzvakos. You will be my chosom on the throne of Israel. Who was Zerubbabel? Who was Shaltiel? You know who Shaltiel was? Son of Yehoyachin. Huh. Zerubbabel ben Shaltiel ben Yehoyachin. Wait a second. That defies 2 promises here. If Shaltiel is Yehoyachin's son, then he's not dying childless.
You can't say that no descendant.
And he said before, no descendant of yours will ever be a chosam on my throne. A strange word. Chagai is definitely thinking of this pasuk when he writes, I'm going to appoint this Rubabel ben Shaltiel the chosam on my throne. Why did he use the word chosam? Because Yirmiyahu used the word chosam. But isn't Chagai just flagrantly violating or defying or denying or contradicting what Yirmiyahu said was not going to happen? Said before, he did a tremendous tshuva. Because it's hard to fathom, he was taken directly into captivity. He was only 18 years old. Right? Gemara says that his wife went into him while he was in jail, and they were together once, and then she bore Shaltiel, and then Shaltiel had Zerubbabel, and Zerubbabel became the great leader of Israel. But why do they call it Chosam? I think the answer is here. Remember, who gave Chagai and Zechariah and Nehemiah and all these people permission to do what they did in Yerushalayim? How did they get to do that under the Persians? We say for Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, Darius, Artaxerxes, Cyrus, they gave them permission. They actually helped them, right? But if you're going to go and start something new in Israel, it's not safe to call the people involved there Melech. They don't mind the governor. Maybe they don't mind even a chosam. But don't call him melech. That's why. Chagai could not refer to Zerubbabel as a king. Because Zerubbabel is only acting in Israel with the favor of the Persian kings. They didn't have independence at this time. They didn't have the autonomy to build up Yerushalayim. Adarab, this did not sit well with the Persian and the Semites, who were probably led by Haman. The group that was responsible for telling them to stop building the temple was what they were called Tzore Yehuda. And Haman is called Tzorera Yehudim. He was probably at the head of them. Not to mention the fact that in Sefer Ezra, the one who stopped them from building the temple was Achashverosh. Perek Dalet says Achashverosh put an end to building the Beis HaMikdash. B'tchilas Malchuso. That's what the party was about. He said, I'm going to stop. I'm going to finally defeat the Jews. They outlasted the Assyrians, they outlasted the Babylonians, but they're not outlasting me. And he made a party of that in the 70th year of this Cheshbon, where he felt that the Jews weren't coming back. The real sin was that the Jews enjoyed it. Jews, man, and this is Achashverosh. When you consider that the whole point of that Seuda was to have Yerushalayim Habira be replaced by Shushan Habira, and all the descriptions in Perek Aleph of the grandeur of Achashverosh are all borrowed from descriptions of the grandeur of the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash, you have the perfect storm of Bnei Yisrael forgetting so quickly what they're supposed to be concentrating on. But that's for a different story. Okay, this is the end of Perek Chaf Beis, and we'll continue next week with a totally new topic. Perek Chaf Gimel.